This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
This is Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for a second day for Tony Perkins, who's taking some well-deserved time off right now. Glad to be back here for the second day and glad you're joining us here all across America for Washington Watch. Today, some interesting topics. Just run through them here for you quickly. We're going to talk about, first up, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I think probably everybody's heard about it. Not too many of us probably know what it is or why it's controversial. We'll also be talking about the Anywhere But Target campaign. You've been hearing for the last number of months about what Target stores have been up to from the very top of their management on down, the support for all kinds of things that are not terribly family-oriented. Then next up, we'll talk about sanctuary cities and what the Trump administration intends to do about them and perhaps some of the other things related to immigration. And then finally, we're going to talk about Trump's Vision for America YouTube video. Did you see it? If you haven't, you might want to. It's sort of a unique way that President-elect Trump has decided to communicate directly to you and I about his vision for America and what his administration intends to do. And then hopefully we'll have a little bit of time in the last segment of the broadcast to take a few of your calls. So again, welcome to Washington Watch. We're glad to be with you this afternoon. Well, let's first talk about TPP. President-elect Donald Trump vows that on the first day in office, he'll issue an executive order to withdraw the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. And I mentioned the YouTube video, which we'll be talking about a little bit more in the fourth segment of the broadcast. Here's a little bit of audio from Donald Trump about TPP.
I am going to issue a notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. Instead, we will negotiate fair bilateral trade deals that bring jobs and industry back onto American shores.
Okay, here's a little bit about TPP. What is it? It was a massive trade deal that it was agreed to in 2015 by 12 nations, including us, the United States, Japan, Malaysia, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Mexico, and others. But it hasn't been ratified yet by the individual countries. Its aim was to deepen economic ties and boost growth, including by reducing tariffs. And there were also some measures in the TPP to enforce labor and environmental standards, copyrights, patents, and other legal protections. But its opponents say it was negotiated in secret and it favored big corporations. Joining us now to talk about it is Republican Congressman Greg Harper of Mississippi. He serves on the influential House Committee on Energy and Commerce, where he's a member of three subcommittees, Environment and the Economy, Commerce, Manufacturing, and Trade and Energy and Power. Welcome, Congressman, to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Evan. It's an honor to be with you today, and happy Thanksgiving to all of your listeners. And I just want to thank you, and what a great job you do, and Tony, of keeping people involved and keeping them up to date on the issues. Because some of this stuff gets a little confusing at times, and I just want to thank you for what you do.
Absolutely. Well, we're hoping you can help us become less confused about TPP. Tell us, dig into the details a little bit. Tell us the history of the thing and the secretive part, because I think that was in the news a little bit. It was kind of hidden in a room somewhere in the bowels of the Capitol, and only people with special passes could get in and look at it. But tell us about TPP.
Certainly this goes back to a fundamental issue of having a lack of trust with our current administration. And, we can handle the truth if you'll just, tell us and lay it out and let us know, and we can deal with it. But, the concept of TPP is probably a good one, in that you do want to have trade deals. But when you get into the details and you begin to look at this, and you have a perfect understanding of why, President-elect Trump doesn't like the deal. For one thing, this is something, some of the problems with it is it does give about 9,200 foreign firms the right to basically circumvent our courts and laws and really attack the laws that we rely on, including those for, safe food and good jobs and some other things that are there. So the idea is good. Yes, we have to have trade agreements because, 95% of the world's customers, live outside the United States. But the problem that we're seeing with TPP, and it's one that it looked good on its surface, but as you dig into the weeds, you realize that the United States stands to lose really millions of manufacturing jobs. And so as you look at what that does, and the Wall Street Journal estimate said that we could increase our U.S. trade deficit under this agreement, certainly in areas like manufacturing, you know, car assembly, car parts, all of that, potentially over $50 billion a year, which is not the direction that we need to go, Evan. So we've got to look through this, come up with ways that work, but losing a manufacturing jobs is a disaster for our country because we're already in a situation where we're in a lot of pain.
All right, let me ask you to dissect TPP just a little bit, going back to the comment you just made about how if TPP were to be ratified by all the countries involved, what mechanisms, what are the moving parts that would remove more manufacturing jobs from here in the United States?
Well, you would see some of those manufacturing jobs that we currently have would go to some of these member countries under TPP. And keep in mind that the countries that are trying to negotiate under TPP or ratify this are allies of ours now. And so there is something there to be said for that part. But what it looks at, Evan, is it will create some advantages for others that at the cost of American manufacturing jobs. And that's what has to be fixed. And so that's why Trump's, you know, concept of having some tough trade negotiators, things that are out there and on the table, making sure that things are done in a way that it's favorable for us, you know, we've got to look at. And I do want to give a shout out to President-elect Trump. And that is just 4 or 5 days ago, as you know, Ford Motor Company, which makes the Lincoln MKC in Kentucky, planning on moving to Mexico, has informed Trump and has made the announcement they're now not going to Mexico, going to stay in Kentucky. So, you know, that's an incredible victory for a man that hasn't even taken the oath of office yet.
Yeah, that's great. And of course, if an agreement like TPP is going to remove manufacturing jobs in particular from America, if that's one of the predicted outcomes, that flies in the face of what Donald Trump has said he wants to do in the United States. Let me ask you if you've had any contact with some of the folks perhaps in the transition or people related to the transition team as to what his solutions are going to be. Because my understanding is from some of the reading I've done about TPP is it's somewhat analogous, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's somewhat analogous to the European Union or what the European Union was before Britain voted to leave it, where it was almost kind of a common market of all of these 12 nations coming together to work together. So first of all, is that correct? And then secondly, what are the alternatives? Is it individual trade deals with each one of these nations or what?
Certainly, you could certainly, I'd say what you stated, I think you could make an argument that it's basically correct that we could wind up in that situation. Now, keep in mind the heart of this, and one of the things that brought about TPP is the fact that notice that China is not one of the member countries.
Right.
So as I've traveled in the Pacific Rim in the last year or two and met with, you know, the Prime Minister of Japan, we've met with the President of South Korea. South Korea is not a part of this agreement. We've met with leaders in Taiwan and others. Their fear is China. And so while we look at this, what's best for America, we also need to make sure that we don't cede territory and trade opportunities to China, which we know China cannot be trusted. Just look at what they've done, whether it's the dumping of steel, whether it's how they've worked within the WTO, the World Trade Organization. So while we have to guard against a bad deal, we also have to be proactive in coming up with something that works to make sure that we don't let China completely dominate a region that's important to our trade.
Well, you know, again, with TPP, there were 12 nations that potentially would be working together in that agreement. Now, that's just 12 nations. There are a lot more out there, of course. So if TPP had been put into effect, and it sounds like it's well, let me ask you this. Is it dead?
There's no way that I see that it can be ratified by the appropriate number of countries before Donald Trump takes his oath of office on January the 20th. So I think it's alive, but the reality is I don't see how this can go forward.
So back to my question, you know, you have these 12 countries, but then there are many, many other, I'm sure, other trading partners. These perhaps are some of the major trading partners that we have. So where would that have left those other countries?
Well, it's certainly, yeah, you're right. We have 12 member countries that are in this, including the United States, but there are others like Colombia and Taiwan. South Korea has expressed an interest in it. And remember, we already do business with most of these countries anyway. It's not like we haven't been doing trade. And so whether that means we come up with a new combined plan under the direction of the president with a more aggressive and I think better and tougher trade negotiators, we're still going to wind up doing business with other countries. So what the long-term arrangement will be as you look at what, you know, I know Trump had his seven-point plan for free trade. And he'll, you know, I think it's shown that Trump already is a good negotiator. He's a good delegator, and he will make those desires known, and certainly those in Congress on the Republican side want to have good trade deals. We deal with abuses by other governments, particularly China, but we deal with some with Russia as well. And we have to be able to address those in a good something that's fair has to be done. And this is something that we look forward to seeing who Donald Trump puts together in this.
Have just about a minute and a half left, but let me ask you about one other component of TPP, and that was one of the things that it would deal with would be tariffs. Tell us a little bit, give us a primer on tariffs, good, bad, or indifferent,
sure.
and kind of where we are now and where you see the Trump administration going.
Well, certainly the tariffs put us in a situation where you wind up without a level playing field. And if you start to do something that is considered aggressive or harmful to another country, then they will slap tariffs and make it even more difficult. So I think it's clear listening to Trump, he's not anti-trade, and he's addressed us in Congress back in a couple of months ago, and he made it clear, I just want to have fair trade. So that means you don't want to start a trade war. But I think we'll come across as so much stronger in this next administration that we'll have the respect of others and we'll be fair. The other problem besides tariffs, Evan, is watching out for subsidies of other countries where they basically allow other companies to dump their products here at cost or below cost, which makes it difficult for us to compete. So we've got to get to a level playing field, and I'm confident we're going to get there.
Republican Congressman Greg Harper of Mississippi, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on Washington Watch today.
Thank you so much, Evan. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too, and a happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Well, coming up next with Thanksgiving, the shopping season is officially here, but one watchdog group says consumers should shop anywhere but Target. Coming up in our next segment.
Hey, our Holy Land tour in March is filling up. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We only go one time a year to Israel, and that's in March. And our tour leaves the 9th and gets back on the 17th. And as I say, we don't have a whole lot of space left on this tour. So if you'd like to go with us and see the Holy Land, you need to give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES with an S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address. We'll send you a brochure or go online at twholyland.com, holyland.com. Again, we're going to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Jericho and Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River, all those places and much, much more. So join us on this very special tour of Israel in March.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Back in 07, my father passed away. My mother had passed away 7 years earlier, and they left me a small inheritance, and I wanted to give back to AFA for all they have done for me.
Carol talks about her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I am an avid listener to AFR, 12 hours a day, and I hear Dan Celia talking about the charitable gift annuity. I liked what the gift annuity offered, donated a certain amount, and from that, I get a check every month, which is retirement income for me.
If you'd like to support the work of the AFA and receive a fixed income for life, a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation may just be what you're looking for. Learn more by contacting the Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Watch. This is Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony today. Washington Watch, glad you're with us this afternoon. Well, back in April, the retail giant Target took a hardline stand on the contentious transgender bathroom debate, opening its bathrooms and fitting rooms according to gender identity, and that's in quotes, as opposed to biological sex. There have been a number of organizations that got involved in that, and not including the American Family Association. They were one of the first ones on board and got a boycott started, and 1.5 million folks committed to that. Also, the conservative corporate watchdog group Second Vote dug in and launched a campaign, hashtag anywhere but Target. Executive Director Lance Ray of Second Vote is here to talk about it. Welcome, Lance.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Well, what is Second Vote? First of all, tell us about that.
Yes, thank you. So whether you know it or not, we're casting a vote every single day and making a difference sometimes in support of causes and issues that we would never support on our own. So we monitor and what sort of policies that companies donate to and support, and score companies on a scale of 1 to 5 on issues such as life, marriage, Second Amendment, environment, education, immigration. And we do that because we want conservatives to be informed on what these companies, what their positions are, so that they can engage these companies on their policies, but ultimately make the shopping decision that reflects their values.
Well, give us a kind of a review of what has been going on at Target in case some of our listeners aren't aware of that.
Sure. So as you mentioned there, back in April, Target decided to advertise the fact that they were going to let men and women use each other's restrooms based on how they identified. And that's a very unsafe policy, and it's against many people's values. And so immediately their sales began to take a hit. Their stock was up around 9.5% at the time when they made that decision. And by May, just a month later, it had gone down. It was down 11%. Their stock is down. Their sales were down. Most importantly, their shopper traffic was down. But companies, especially Target, their revenue, they earn 30% of their revenue for the Christmas season. sees it. We're in the fourth quarter. So that's why a lot of these companies, they don't make these types of decisions in the fourth quarter. They do so at the first quarter because a lot of us forget, or by Christmas time, some of us don't care. But that's the reason why we need to send a message to Target now, because their sales are starting to go back up for the Christmas season.
Well, I remember reading an article several months back, and it was in part an interview with the CEO or the president of Target about this issue, and he was adamant that they were not going to change their policy. My understanding is that Tim Wildman of the American Family Association actually either sat down with him or called him or whatever in an effort to help explain why the policy is not good for families. What can you tell us about that?
That's exactly right. They're taking a hard line here, thinking and betting against that people will actually hold them accountable to it. They made some kind of mitigating effort to say that they were going to spend $20 million to add single occupancy bathrooms that you can lock, but they still weren't going to change their policy. But again, they're betting against people voting with their values, with their dollars, and that's why not only do we need to not shop there and shop at better alternatives, but go to anywherebuttarget.com or hashtag anywherebuttarget so that you can send a message to Target. You can send them a Facebook post. You can send them a tweet. However, there's different ways to do it, to send them the message, to let them know that this is the reason why.
And, you know, we always want to be gracious when we're communicating with an organization like Target. Certainly, you know, we want to be wise in how we communicate. But the Anywhere But Target hashtag, tell me a little bit more about what, how's that been catching on and how many people are involved in that?
We've, our metrics are showing that we've reached over a million people this week since we've launched this past Monday by social media, newsletters, a lot of our partners and friends are helping us with this, and it's not necessarily a boycott. And to your point, yes, but we're not saying to do anything mean spirited. We're just saying that this is a vote, just like we just exercised our vote last week. This is to do so with the same with our money. And if Target wants to take this stance that they are so adamantly doing, then we have a right to hold them accountable and say, hey, we don't believe in this. We believe in equality, but there has to be a balance. And if this is the position that you're going to take, Target, then we're going to go somewhere else, and we're going to just let you know that this is the reason why.
Now, as you know, as I mentioned, American Family Association started a boycott of its own quite a while back, and they released a list of 10 crimes that resulted from the abuse of Target's bathroom policy. Do you know anything about those crimes? And this is really kind of where it gets down to important stuff, isn't it?
It really is. It's a safety situation, and AFA has done an excellent job in what they've done, and we have followed those situations, those reports from around the country where there have been, just as anyone would expect. It's really common sense. Again, it's not about equality, but if you start letting men into women's bathrooms, women's locker rooms, women's fitting rooms, that's a recipe for disaster. And I have three daughters myself, and I'm not sure that I would feel comfortable about that. So it's not so much a political issue. It's not about equality. It's a safety concern.
Yes, because some will take advantage of those policies regardless. So obviously Anywhere But Target and Target Stores is one of the organizations that you are targeting, shall we say. Tell us a little bit more about your general website where folks can go find out more about what other companies are doing, who they're donating to, and so forth.
Yes, thank you very much. Go to secondvote.com. We have a website. We have an app. You can type in a company and you can find out what issue is important to you and find out how those companies score on those issues. You can, like I said, you can also use the app if you're out and you're shopping. And we have this other website set up, anywherebuttarget.com, specifically for this message to Target. But please come to secondvote.com to find out all about the other companies.
Very good. Lance Ray is the executive director of Second Vote. Again, secondvote.com is the website for more information. Well, coming up after the break, we'll continue to unpack President-elect Trump's first 100-day plan as he announced yesterday, coming up on the other side of the break.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, apparently OPEC is likely to finalize oil output proposal. Well, I'll believe it when I see it, but that's what the delegates from Nigeria are saying today. So we'll have to see, and obviously oil is rallying on that. There's a good possibility here by the end of the trading week, we could see $50 barrel oil. Based on this, on top of what Russia said yesterday, talking about an oil production cut, they did say yesterday that they would, not they might, not they could, but they would cut production, and that has got oil rallying. Of course, the big question right now is not oil. The big question is, could we possibly see 19,000 on the Dow? Well, it looks like we are likely to see 19,000 on the Dow as this Trump rally continues. This rally likely to be spilling over into the European and the Asia markets, and that is likely to continue as well. All of this on news that one of the largest economies in the Eurozone, Germany, is saying that their 2017 growth forecast is not likely to expand at the rate that they thought it was going to. That is primarily due to uncertainties around Trump's decisions in reference to trade. So it's going to be an interesting week, that is for certain.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Glad you're listening today. Well, some cities like San Francisco and Baltimore have become sanctuary cities by offering some level of protection for illegal aliens. Well, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, President-elect Trump's pick for Attorney General, has some pretty strong opinions about that. Joining us now is someone who knows a great deal about immigration, and that's Jennifer Breeden, legal analyst for the Clarion Project. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Well, Jennifer, first of all, I mean, we've all heard about sanctuary cities, but can you define what a sanctuary city is and maybe, you know, legally even, and what kinds of things go on there?
Well, and really, there's no...
Well, we'll have to... All right. Very good. We'll get Jennifer back here in just a minute. So at any rate, Senator Jeff Sessions is on record saying that so-called sanctuary cities that protect illegal immigrants should be prosecuted. He himself may get that chance next year. And of course, that's if he is confirmed for that post. Some sanctuary cities have already said they'll resist any effort to change their behavior. In fact, maybe you've heard that Rahm Emanuel, who is the mayor of Chicago, came out and essentially did a press conference and said, if you're here, you don't have to worry. We're going to protect you. In other words, we're going to continue to be a sanctuary city. Well, Jennifer, you're back on the line, I understand.
Yes, I am. Sorry about
there
that.
There we go. All right. So we were asking you, what is a sanctuary city and what goes on there?
Right. And so basically, what's funny is that there's no recognized legal definition, nor is there a solid list. But basically, a sanctuary city is a city where the local officials refuse to comply with federal immigration orders that could lead to deportation. So the federal government says, look, we have some people we want to put in detention or deport them because they're illegal. The city can say, no, this is a sanctuary city. They can stay here. We're going to ignore all your orders. They outline their own sanctuary allowances. So not even every city has the exact same allowances for what they, require or allow of the illegals that stay within their city borders.
Well, who makes the decision that a city is going to be a sanctuary city? And really, they don't have any legal standing, do they?
They don't. But unfortunately, over the last 8 years, the current administration has allowed them to have legal standing by saying that this is okay and we're going to allow this, that there can be some sanctuary cities. And so what happened is the Obama administration set the precedent, the legal precedent, to allow cities to do this under this kind of term of state immunity. States have this sovereign immunity where the city officials and the local officials in that area can make these principles, and because our federal government has allowed it, it's been allowed to stand there.
Well, what would a future attorney general, and of course, Jeff Sessions has been put forward by the president-elect as the candidate for the attorney general spot. Of course, he has to be confirmed, has to go through Senate confirmation. But assuming that he or someone else is brought into that position, what power do they have to stop the sanctuary cities?
Well, a lot of power. And actually, I think, Jeff Sessions spoke very well in talking about how he would take away federal funding, certain federal programs and federal grants that go to those kinds of cities. Cities that do that, I think that's a good idea, because there do need to be punishments. You need to take away that legal precedent and start stripping that legal precedent from sanctuary cities, because the danger of these far-left leaders who want to defy Trump, and that's all they really want to do is defy Trump, saying that we're not going to listen to this. You're now talking about what amounts to a rebellion or a mutiny from cities that want to go against the executive authority. You know, the president is in charge of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Homeland Security. And so by sanctuary cities and these local officials just not wanting to be a part of the executive administration, they're going to allow these, you know, illegal migrants, and not just illegal migrants, but now we're talking about maybe Islamic extremists that come over from Middle Eastern countries that could have extremist ties. Now sanctuary cities can use the precedent that's been set by the Obama administration and say, you know, we're going to refuse to detain them and to listen to federal Homeland Security provisions.
Okay, so as I was mentioning while you had dropped off there, Rahm Emanuel came out recently, did a press conference, and essentially bucked what the president-elect said he's going to do with sanctuary cities. And he said, you don't have to worry about anything. You're going to be safe here in Chicago. So what kind of pressure is going to be put on Rahm Emanuel when he comes out and essentially blatantly says he's going to defy what will become a federal government mandate?
Well, and lots of pressure. You know, Rahm Emanuel, remember, this is a man who's quoted as saying, never let a good scandal go to waste. This is a man who's used his city, which is falling apart, the murder rate skyrocketing in Chicago, and just to really defy who he considers this, you know, right wing or the conservative party and conservative movement. And in terms of just pressure to put on him, one, yes, it's restricting federal funding. But we now seeing that, you know, it's not going to matter when it's just what he wants, never letting a good scandal go to waste. And so you can restrict federal funding. You can put sanctions on him, sanctions in terms of restricting those funds that he gets into his city. But not just that, it's really chastising him and saying, look, you're putting your own people in danger. Is it more important for you to allow not only illegal migrants, but possibly dangerous Islamic extremists, people with extremist ties that are law enforcement, Homeland Security, they need to work with local law enforcement to investigate these people and keep your city safe. Is it more important that you defy the Trump administration than you protect your city and maintain secure borders within the city of Chicago?
Well, everything you just said makes a lot of sense, makes common sense, if you will. But we've lost a lot of common sense recently. And, you know, I heard the L.A., the police chief of Los Angeles also made a similar comment about this. And so, you know, the rule of law is something that we've lost track of, it seems, and looks like we're going to be able to maybe move more in that direction and do things that make sense. Well, Jennifer Breeden, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. We appreciate it, and glad you're able to join us.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Jennifer Breeden, legal analyst for the Clarion Project. Well, coming up in our final segment, we'll continue to unpack President-elect Trump's first 100-day plan that he announced yesterday. We'll talk with Gail Trotter, the D.C. insider who has her ear close to the heartbeat of American politics, coming up on the next segment of Washington Watch.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Introducing the colorful new AFA Christmas wristbands. They serve as cheerful reminders of what Christmas is all about. Get a wristband free when you visit afa.net/Christmas. And remember, when you request your free bracelet and order more, you're keeping the American Family Association in the battle to restore Christian values in America. They come in packs of 10, so order several. Stop by afa.net/Christmas today.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. A recent British headline read, "Parents fear that religion will make their children outcasts." That should be an expectation rather than an excuse to not pass on one's faith. After all, Jesus warned that persecution is part and parcel of authentic Christianity. With eternal consequences in mind, how can we parents not do our best to pass on a real and vibrant faith? It's only nominal or cultural Christianity that doesn't accept the fact that for the authentic Christian, persecution is normal. We must be a people willing to pay the price of conviction. The Apostle Paul reminds us that it's not only a blessing to believe on Jesus, but to suffer for him as well. Are we convictional Christians standing no matter what, or are we conditional Christians standing only when convenient? By his grace and strength, God help us to stand. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to the last segment of Washington Watch. This is Evan Fowler talking to you from the headquarters of Bot Radio Network in Kansas City. I'm thrilled and honored to be sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Our last segment, we're going to be talking about a reaction to President-elect Trump's Vision for America video. And I'm going to give you our phone number so that you can get online if you'd like to talk with our next guest here toward the end of the segment. That number is 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. Well, our President-elect Donald Trump is back in Manhattan. He was in New Jersey for a couple of days. I think over the weekend, he's back at Trump Tower again, interviewing more potential cabinet picks. As we've been discussing yesterday, he outlined his plans for his first 100 days in the White House in a video posted online yesterday. Did you see it? He said his agenda is based on the principle of putting America first. I want to play a couple of short clips from that video here, and we can go right ahead with that, Brent.
As part of this plan, I've asked my transition team to develop a list of executive actions we can take on day one to restore our laws and bring back our jobs. It's about time. On regulation, I will formulate a rule which says that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated. So important.
Well, that's just a little bit of about a 2.5-minute video that was released yesterday. And here to discuss the Trump agenda is Gail Trotter, D.C.-based columnist. She writes for The Hill and Daily Caller. She's appeared all over the place. She's a political analyst and attorney. Gail, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you this evening.
All right. Well, you've got an insider's view being right there in the heart of it in D.C. How are folks receiving President-elect Trump's first 100-day plan, in your view?
Right. Well, across the country, the video has received earlier today over 1.5 million views. So it's really an effective way that he's getting his message out to all Americans. And there's a lot of discussion on the Hill about what his priorities are, and through this video, he really set out some of the things that are going to be on the top of his agenda and put it in an accessible way that people can understand that he's trying to follow through on his campaign promises. So there is, I guess, support on the Hill of the people who were behind his bid for the presidency. And I think that there's a lot of feeling that it's a good way that he's reaching out to all Americans and already using his platform to bring the American people along who elected him to this office on his very strong agenda. And with that kind of support of the American people and the support of a Republican Congress, he will be able to get some really meaningful change in Washington.
Well, you know, most presidents have used television or have used press conferences typically when they're gearing up for their, you know, their first administration to communicate to the public what the progress is and what they're thinking about. This is a little bit different. And, you know, Donald Trump has done a lot of things differently, we have to admit, during this campaign. There's a kind of a surprise at every corner, it seems. Well, what do you think about the method he's using here, using YouTube to tell us about what he's planning to do?
Right, it's a new generation, and the Democrats were widely credited for being able to harness the internet and technology in order to get Barack Obama elected in the first place in 2008, using data to get President Obama's message out as he was in office and get support for some of his policy initiatives. Now we're seeing that the Republicans under Donald Trump are doing the same thing. There's a really great article in Forbes magazine, the cover of it, about Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and how he was able to take a lot of his contacts in Silicon Valley and come up with a digital media strategy to help propel Donald Trump into the victorious position that he was on election night. And I think we're going to be able to see a lot of this strategy going forward as President-elect Trump continues to reach out to his supporters and generate a lot of discussion where sometimes after the presidential election is decided, people become less interested in politics. They go back to their normal lives. But I think we're going to see a different thing from this administration using YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, a lot of different platforms that Republicans have not been able to use as effectively in the past.
Talking with Gail Trotter, she's a D.C.-based columnist, political analyst, and attorney. Our phone number, if you want to call in and talk with Gail, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. Well, Gail, do you think this is the first of a number of YouTube videos? Do you have any sense for whether he's going to kind of keep laying things out this way?
I believe he will, and if he is wise, he will be able to do that effectively ahead of time before he puts any big policy proposals out there so that he can test the waters, see what the reaction is, see if he needs to change the direction of the approach a little bit. And he will be able to take some of the complicated issues that he campaigned on, like changing our tax code, changing the corporate tax rate, dealing with corporate tax inversions. He'll be able to use the video platform to get the message out directly to the people and not put it through the filter of the mainstream media, which went full bore to try and make sure that he was not elected.
Well, you know, you talked about some of the data analytics that the Obama campaign used and again, how that was marshaled by the Trump campaign as well. And, you know, data analytics have gotten much more sophisticated to the point now where you can actually sort of monitor Facebook and Twitter traffic and kind of get a sense of the pulse of what's going on out there. And I know probably that a lot of the policies that that Trump is going to put into effect, he didn't necessarily take the pulse and say, what is it you want? But, you know, these are heartfelt agenda items and policy items that he thinks are important to get America moving forward. But, you know, what's your sense as far as whether that that data analytics stuff is still in play?
Yes, certainly. And I think he has a dual-pronged approach because during the campaign, he went out and spoke and had these huge rallies of tens of thousands of people attending his talks, and he would say different things, and based on the reaction he got, he could understand where the sentiment of the American people lies. And I think that he'll be able to use that in the data analytics area as well. He has a huge job ahead of him, putting in his team for the transition, you know, starting at the very top, at the cabinet members, the attorney general, then looking at their deputies, the people who will be assisting the very top people in his government. And I think it will be very effective for him when he goes out there with all these policy proposals to be able to get them directly to the people and not have to go through the prism of the editorial board of the New York Times, the editorial board of the Washington Post, or even on some of these trade issues, the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal.
That's right. Well, let's turn the corner just a little bit. I want to ask how you think he's handling the media. Over the weekend, or at least a couple of days ago, he invited some of the top management of ABC News, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, and some of the anchors. And there are some interesting reports coming out of this so-called off-the-record event. What do you know about that?
That's right. There were many reports that he really took these top media executives who had been summoned to meet with him, who wanted the opportunity to go and talk to him and find out what kind of access they would have in his to his White House, to his top people. And he really took them to the Woodhouse. He told them that he was unhappy about the lies that they had continued to make and push forward against him during the election. Now, as you said, it was supposed to be an off-the-record meeting. So you do wonder who leaked these conversations. Are they accurate? It's hard to know, but that has always been a thing with White House's administrations going back. Even Howard Kurtz wrote a book about this. He was the media reporter for the Washington Post. He wrote an entire book, Spin Cycle, about the lack of the access of the press to the Clinton administration White House. And this is going to be interesting to see how Donald Trump plays the media, because you certainly want to have as much exposure for your ideas as possible. But the elite mainstream media has made no secret of the fact that they want to oppose Donald Trump at every turn.
Well, Gail, I have Kevin from Texas on the line, and he has a question about the first 100 days. Go ahead, Kevin.
More or less, some of my thoughts on what you're talking about, starting with President Trump using YouTube and so forth and Twitter to get his news out, is it's something, maybe it's a question too, is the mainstream media has kind of put themselves as the only interface that can be between public officials and the American people. And what I see the president doing more and more, and what I felt's often needed, is a lot more of a president getting out talking to the American people about day-to-day things directly. And I think what scares the mainstream media the most is if he can talk directly to the American people, that makes them a whole lot less relevant. He doesn't need them.
That's right.
And just sort of my thoughts were here is that she kind of thinks this is where the president's going. He says, I need to be a leader. Leaders talk directly to the people they lead. They discuss the issues at hand. And they try to make an argument for those, make an articulation directly to the people that they're leading. And that's something I thought is even back on like President Bush that I really think hasn't been done since President Reagan.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, Kevin, thanks for your call. Gail, what would your comment be about Kevin's thought there?
Right. I think Kevin is exactly right. And Trump would be very wise to take advantage of that. Think of the telephone game that kids play. The operator game that you say something to one person and then the person whispers it to the next person, the person whispers it to the next person. And if Trump is able to do it through YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, put his exact message out there, it's easier for people to go to the source and find out what he truly said, what he truly thinks, instead of having it go through the operator type filter of the mainstream media. And I think he's right. Reagan was very good at doing that as well. He didn't have the same type of technology, but Reagan, of course, had been a former radio host. He knew how to communicate with people. He knew how to put his best message out there. And one would hope that Trump would be able to combine the best of this positive vision of America, the America first, America, you know, a new dawning, the shining city on the hill, with the advantages that technology gives him to avoid the filtration of the mainstream media.
I have Billy on from Alabama, also has a comment or a question about the first 100 days. Go ahead, Billy.
Thank you. I read a book called The Art of the Deal about Donald Trump, and he's got a wisdom about cutting things out that's unnecessary and replace them with the things that are the most effective. I just wanted to comment on the book, The Art of the Deal. It's a good understanding of how Trump was and how he still is today. He's very good at making wise decisions.
Well, thanks for that call as well. Gail, have you read that book, by the way?
Yes, and Billy, I want to say one of the things specifically tied to this video he just released was a proposal that for any new regulation that the federal government puts forward, that two regulations will be eliminated. And what a wonderful thing, because D.C. is so tied up with red tape that it has been such a disadvantage to our economy. And Donald Trump, being a successful businessman, knows how to unleash the American economy. And like you're saying, that is a wise approach, even just rhetorically, to say, if we're going to keep gumming up the system for businesses in our country, we're going to make sure that we're undoing some of what has already been done. And that wisdom of knowing that you don't want to just pass laws and create regulations willy-nilly. You want to have the wisdom to discern the things that are necessary and that will improve the situation.
Gail, in the last couple of minutes of the broadcast, I'd like you to comment on a separate matter, and that is that Donald Trump says that he doesn't want to hurt the Clintons, doesn't plan to pursue prosecution of Hillary Clinton. As an attorney, what do you think he's really saying? You know, he's gotten a lot of flack from all over the place saying that, so what are your thoughts about that?
Right, well, poor Donald Trump can't win on that issue, because when his supporters are out there crying out to lock her up, the press is criticizing him as being some kind of dictator who wants to jail his opponent. And when he says that she's a good person, and he's being, I would say, somewhat gracious in winning and not gloating about having won, then he's criticized as being too soft. And truly, the thing that's going to be the case going forward is Hillary Clinton should, of her own conscience, come clean and make reparations to the American people for these grave issues that she had of having this confidential information in an unsecure location, the secret server that put people at risk. And so I think that Donald Trump is giving her the space to be a person of character, and it remains to be seen if Hillary Clinton can rise to the occasion.
Okay, so maybe he says he doesn't want to prosecute her, but the FBI supposedly is still running an investigation in the background, isn't it, into the Clinton Foundation?
Yes, and that's on a separate track. So that is something that the FBI is going to have to continue to investigate, and if they have enough evidence that they want to refer it to the Department of Justice, then whomever is in charge of the Department of Justice, looking like it's probably going to be Jeff Sessions if he is confirmed in his nomination, then that's going to be a decision that's made over at the Department of Justice.
So in this last minute or so, how do you think the transition is going, just very briefly?
Yes, he is doing a good job of calling out different people. He made a switch from Chris Christie to Mike Pence to run the transition. Chris Christie apparently is still involved, but not to the same degree. And I think that shows that he's able to switch things as circumstances permit and is not wedded to making sure that loyalties are observed. He is handling it. He's proceeding apace. And there have been some good articles at the Daily Signal, which is produced by the Heritage Foundation, showing that his transition is on path either the same as prior presidents or even in a more solid position than prior presidents.
That's right. Well, Gail, thanks very much. This has been Washington Watch. Thanks so much for listening.
For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.